personally and as trustee of and trust established under Article 3 of the estate of Egon Wolf Appellants versus Westwood Management LLC et al. Mr. Alderman for the appellants, Mr. Kiernan for the appellees.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Les Alderman. I represent the appellants, who we'll call the Wolfs, against the appellees, who we'll call the Taubert interests, just to have some kind of shorthand. In this case, I guess an agreement to arbitrate is analyzed under a two-part test. First, was there an agreement? Second, if so, does that agreement cover this dispute? Then, I guess if the answer is in the affirmative, we would look to Section 2 of the Federal Arbitration Act and determine whether there are any factors that would excuse avoiding the contract, anything in law or equity that would let us avoid the contract. In this particular case, going to the first step, there is no agreement. There was no agreement to material terms of an arbitration agreement. Absent are how and when arbitration would be commenced, what rules of evidence would be applied, whether discovery, if at all, would be permitted, whether the arbitrator's decision would be reviewable, and how. All of these elements are missing.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen an arbitration agreement that has all those elements in it.
But you know why, Your Honor? It's because every arbitration agreement that you've seen says we agree to abide by the AAA commercial rules. And if you then look at the AAA commercial rules, the preamble says, by referring to these rules, the parties agree to the following. And the following is a list of 52 rules that govern all of those material terms. So in most cases, the parties incorporate by reference the material terms to an arbitration agreement by referring to the AAA.
They agree for a method of finding three arbitrators, right? What else do you know? Then the arbitrators go from there, right? Are you saying that a minimum requirement is incorporating the AAA rules or something like that?
I think that the 52, just taking the commercial rules under the AAA, right. The 52 rules constitute not, I don't think you have to have every single one of those 52 rules to have the material terms, but you have to have the substantial ones, the when and how does arbitration get commenced, the whether discovery is going to be available.
Case authority for that?
There's the district court case that we cited in the appellate and reply brief, but I have not seen any circuit court cases in that regard. But, Your Honor, what I would say to you is that this arbitration agreement is no better than our agreement that I'll sell you my house. There is no meat to it. How much? When? Where's my house? None of those factors are present in that statement. And it's the same thing with this arbitration agreement. So secondly, with respect to does an agreement exist, we know that under Litton and Nolde Brothers, you can have an arbitration agreement, but it can expire, and it expires upon termination of the contract. In this case...
Wait. Litton provides just the opposite. Litton says that you have to... it has to be expressly negated or by clear implication negated. It survives the expiration of an agreement.
Even if that's the case, Your Honor?
That is the case. I just read it from Litton. Okay.
The DCJV includes such a limitation. That's paragraph 4. I'm sorry, the DCJV is the District of Columbia Joint Venture. It includes such a limitation. That's paragraph 4, which says, this venture will be limited to this particular project, which means that this agreement only applies to the DCJV. The DCJV died. It was terminated January 1st, 1985, when Dr. Tauber converted all DCJV interests, into other partnerships, and in our case, into a trust. So under Litton and Nolde, with that termination, in order for arbitration to the arbitration agreement to apply, the dispute has to arise out of the original agreement. In this case, the dispute doesn't arise out of the DCJV. It arises out of the breach of trust. What happened here is there were all kind of refinances using the TransPoint building and taking the money from the TransPoint building to use for other properties, other partnerships.
But if the TransPoint building was the reason for the DCJV, right? And
yes,
so
ma'am.
The dispute really does arise out of that.
Not necessarily. And I don't think so at all. This dispute arises out of taking money from the TransPoint building and applying it to other buildings, to other partnerships. So really this dispute arises over the management of other partnerships subsequent to the DCJV without regard to our trust interest. So really the dispute arises after the DCJV was terminated. And
tell me about your trust interest. That's I'm assuming the property and the trust is the TransPoint building and this adjacent lot. Some percentage of that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. What's the actual evidence that there's a trust here?
Well, the evidence is the offer and the December 1984 letter to investors. Mm-hmm. And then there's recognition thereafter that the Wolfs, took the Tauber interest up on that offer to hold the interest
of
trust.
Where in the record is that?
That in the record, you can find that in the district court judge's opinion.
I find it in his opinion, but what I'm asking is what was his opinion based on?
Well, his opinion was based on our allegations in the complaint, which must be accepted as true at this stage. So what you have, getting back to these financial transactions, if the DCJV hadn't been terminated and hadn't at that time and had been managed as a standalone property, then those transactions, I believe, would have been embezzlement, taking money from one property and applying it either to the Tauber's own pockets or to other properties. It would be embezzlement. So the transactions themselves weren't possible but for the extinguishment of the DCJV. So we would say that under Litton and Nolde, even if there is an arbitration agreement, it doesn't apply. Then if there was an arbitration agreement and it survives Litton and Nolde, then you look at the DCJV, the terms of the agreement itself, to determine whether or not it applies to this dispute. And if you take a look at the DCJV, its own terms demonstrate that the arbitration agreement would not apply. The terms of the arbitration agreement say, if any dispute arises under the construction and management of the office building complex.
And you want us to read management in a temporal sense.
In a temporal sense, but also in a substance sense. As I said earlier, the Taubers were not...
Management can include sale.
Well, I think it's limited in this manner, Judge Rogers. They were no longer managing the DCJV. When they sold the TransPoint building, they were managing Tauber 1 or L&T Master, whatever the subsequent partnership was called. That's what they were managing when they sold the TransPoint building. They were no longer managing the DCJV. And certainly they weren't managing the DCJV when they were pulling money out of it and applying it to other properties. So,
but the DCJV isn't the object to be managed. It's the property encompassed in that agreement that is to be managed.
The joint venture is what was being managed. The joint venture's property was the TransPoint building. The TransPoint building then moved to another partnership, but the DCJV applies inward to the management of the DCJV.
The district court found your client was not a member or partner in these other subsequent consolidated and then divided partnerships, but that you had a trust that arose out of this 1984 letter
Yes, Your Honor.
And where does that trust come from? I mean, back to sort of Judge Brown's questions.
The trust comes from the offer in the letter.
It arose under the DCJV.
No, I don't believe it did. I think that letter terminated the DCJV.
No, it was an offer.
Well, it wasn't an offer. In this sense.
That's what I want to do, and if you object.
It said, maybe this is mincing words. It said, this is what I'm going to do. You may choose one of these three things, but you can't just have the DCJV anymore. That's dead. That's going to be terminated. So that letter doesn't arise out of the DCJV. It's what terminated the DCJV and what gives rise to the subsequent partnerships and the trust. So going down the line, if this court does find that there was an arbitration agreement and that it does apply to the disputes here, we think that the appellee's unclean hands should prohibit them from enforcing the arbitration agreement. And that is this refusal to give the appellants access to the financial records of what happened during these refinances, where that money was applied, and whether or not they got any credit for it in their own trust. And I think that the appellee's response to that request is telling. They basically say, you don't have a right to it. Well,
let me ask you. The district court says the obligations at issue in this case can only have arisen from the DCJV agreement because there was no other agreement with the defendants that Wolf entered into. Now, where in your complaint did you plead the establishment of this trust? I mean, I know you referred to it, but did you adequately plead?
Let me grab my copy.
The elements of the trust.
Your Honor, the quote that you just mentioned from the district court is internally inconsistent. If you look at page 4 of the district court's opinion, it's either page 3 or 4. The court then says, Dr. Tauber offered to hold the Wolf interest in trust, and the Wolves agreed. Mm-hmm. So the court
that's
is...
enough?
I do believe that's enough, Your Honor.
Do you have any authority for that?
No, but I'll be happy to present it in a subsequent brief.
Oh, I thought that's why the district court wrote what it wrote.
Well,
the only agreement here is this DCJV agreement, since your client wasn't, you know, part of these other agreements.
We believe that's one of the district court's primary errors. It's internally inconsistent. On page 4, it says there was a trust agreement, and then on page 9, it says there was no agreement.
No, it says there was an offer, and your client accepted. But what is the trust?
The trust was an agreement to honor the Wolf's interests in the TransPoint building. Just as Dr. Tauber agreed to do. Any ambiguity there would be applied against Dr. Tauber. But the district court recognized offer and acceptance of an agreement to hold interest in trust. Then, Your Honor, with respect to the question, where do we plead the agreement to hold the property in trust?
The elements of the trust.
I think the elements of the trust are present in the 84 letter, which is the fairly naked assertion, we'll agree to hold your interest. So then the question, what is your interest, gets answered.
Here's your complaint, all right? You say, this dispute relates to defendants' use and sale of real property situated in the District of Columbia in which plaintiffs have an ownership interest via their membership in the D.C., in the District of Columbia joint venture.
Yes, Your Honor. Their interest.
He took that as true.
Their interest arose from the from the DCJV, which was terminated. To be more accurate, our sentence should have said, in parentheses, after DCJV, terminated 1985.
Well, I mean, he's taking your complaint as you wrote it.
Your Honor, our complaint also includes...
And it says in paragraph 5, the defendants held plaintiff's interest in the DCJV in trust.
That's right, Your Honor.
So why is the district court's finding that your claim arises out of the interest you had under the DCJV?
Wrong.
Error.
Because our interests are defined by incorporating by reference the terms of the DCJV into the trust. The breach of that trust occurred when, while the TransPoint building was being managed along with these other properties, TransPoint funds were applied to other properties without giving our clients credit for it. And then you've got the below market sale of both the building and the adjacent lot. So the appellant's rights arise, you know, their ownership rights arise from the DCJV. That's where it all started. The DCJV ended in 1985. And the disputes arise, which is the important thing for the arbitration question.
I mean, throughout your complaint, you referred to, as members of the DCJV, the plaintiffs may bring this derivative claim. I mean, you've embraced the DCJV in stating your claim.
Your Honor, we have to embrace the DCJV.
Yes, you do. And that's what the district court found.
Well, but I think that there's a fine line there. We have to embrace the DCJV because that's where our rights came from. The rights that were violated were rights that were held in a trust after 1985. And this lawsuit is about the violation of that trust. To explain why we have the right to bring a derivative action, we have to trace back the lineage of our right in the TransPoint building, which goes back to the DCJV. But that doesn't mean that we are arguing that the DCJV is live and well.
All right. Do you want to hold a few minutes?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court. Let me start right in on this issue of the trust. The implicit argument I think the appellants are making is that the trust agreement included an agreement to no longer have an arbitration clause. And I think this goes to the Litton issue as well. Our argument below was that the appellants remained liable under the DCJV as well as to the successor agreements. The lower court found it just relied on the DCJV agreement itself, didn't go into this additional issue, said I'll take the plaintiffs at their word that they were not parties to these later agreements, but nevertheless it's still covered by the arbitration agreement in the District of Columbia joint venture. But I think the argument here is that there was a new superseding trust agreement and that a trust agreement didn't have an arbitration clause in it. And that doesn't flow at all. I will concede, since I had nothing to do with drafting them, that you know this is not a model of corporate entity maintenance. But what is clear is that the parties from the outset that were investing with Dr. Tauber said several things. First of all, he was running the show. It's all over that District of Columbia joint venture agreement. Secondly, that we were not going to go to court if we had disputes. We were not going to do it in the middle of the construction, and we were not going to, and any dispute was going to go to an arbitration. And the concept of what happened in 1984 when this was put in trust is still not inconsistent with the idea that they're still agreeing to arbitrate disputes. Again, we had provided to the lower court.
But how is the divvying up of the sales proceeds management of the property?
Because the issue here has to do with how are these properties financed and later managed over the years. The complaint itself.
It's about building and management, right?
But the complaint itself, paragraph 28, for example, has transactions on both sides of this 1984 agreement. How refinancings were done before the 1984 agreement and afterwards. And the complaint itself alleges that throughout the tenure of this project, the way the properties were acquired and financed and loaned and et cetera was in violation of some right that they had.
I can see how refinancing while you're owning the property could arguably be part of the management of the property. But once the property's sold and the proceeds are divvied up amongst the partners, how is that management of the property?
But I'm not sure I really read the complaint as going to the claim that you have just said.
I'm going to the the language of the arbitration agreement, right? I mean, the disputes that are to be arbitrated are those having to do with the management of this piece of property. So why is a dispute over the divvying up of the proceeds from the sale of that property part of the management of that property?
But I believe what the complaint alleges is that the way that the properties were sold, in other words, the mechanism, who they were sold to and so forth, was infected by some sort of self-dealing or self-interest. I don't read the complaint as being that.
And that's management of the property?
I think sale of the property would be the decision about who to sell it to and so forth would clearly be the management. And if you look at paragraph 5 of the D.C. joint venture, the original document, you know, Dr. Tauber is in charge of all construction activities, leasing, mortgaging, and selling, and other dealings with such land and proposed construction. And that if then an arbitration clause that says any dispute or controversy would include those in which...
Let's say we don't buy your argument on that. Let's say we take the narrowest permissible reading of the arbitration clause, and I'm focusing on management.
On management. And then in a temporal sense, management while we own it, not what we do.
When I think the common meaning of management of the property, does that include divvying up the proceeds of the sale of the property? I'm not certain it does.
It may have more to do with management of the entities, is what Your Honor is saying. I still think that the clause, and again, if you take it in the more narrow reading, any dispute that arises during construction and management of the complex,
That's not talking about the partnerships. It's not talking about the entities that created. It's talking about management of this particular piece of property.
It still, though, I think, would get into the issue of how are we dealing with the proceeds of sale? What mortgages do we pay? What obligations do we pay? And there is no other operative document between these parties, again, assuming that you're taking a narrow view on this. I mean, this is the joint venture agreement. And so that would leave us in, I think, sort of a counterintuitive situation where the parties are agreeing to arbitrate everything up until the final distribution of the proceeds, which, again, even under a narrow reading, seems counterintuitive if you're dealing with every other aspect of it up until that point, including the sale, would be subject to an arbitration agreement. But I think, and this goes back to the earlier colloquy with counsel, I think the lower court and this court can rely on the way that the plaintiffs themselves have framed their complaint. This was a verified complaint in which they said, we are members of the D.C. joint venture. And I just don't see any support for the argument that they can have it both ways, that we have an interest that was created with this arbitration understanding. We have followed it through the years. We're now here nearly 40 years later. But claiming that the disputes are not covered by the arbitration clause. Again, the allegations of the complaint are that this is all stems back from that original agreement. And I think if the original agreement is valid, both by its terms and with the presumption of arbitrability that should apply, that all of these disputes are encompassed by that agreement. They are specifically, even the breach of fiduciary duty arising from whatever this trust was, is specifically alleged in the complaint as being a breach of the fiduciary duty that the defendants had. This is paragraph 36, and there are a couple of them throughout the complaint, that they owed a fiduciary duty to the plaintiffs as a result of their power and control over the plaintiff's property interests held in trust by the defendants in the TransPoint building and the adjacent lot. And I think the derivative counts, by definition, stem from the D.C. joint venture agreement. I think the lower court was correct, and I think this court would be correct in finding that no matter how you construe the arbitration clause, it encompasses the claims as alleged by the plaintiffs in their own complaint. and there's nothing unfair about that. I think the suggestion that whatever the transaction was in 1984 with the trust agreement intended to terminate the arbitration agreement is just not borne out by the record, and it seems to me that it's highly unlikely that you would demonstrate that the reason for the trust agreement was to cause the arbitration clause to disappear from the party's relationship. And to go back back to the first point that was made earlier, I think the arbitration clause itself is more than sufficient to be enforceable. It is much more than simply a bare bones, let's arbitrate. Here's how we're going to pick arbitrators, and most significantly, it says the parties agree to abide by the decision of the arbitrators, whether it's the two original ones or if they have to go to a tiebreaker third person. So there's nothing unfair about enforcing the arbitration agreement as well. If the court has no more questions.
All right, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant.
Your Honor, first, all of the parties' rights changed. All of the parties that were formerly part of the DCJV, they had their rights changed after 1985. They got the rights of their new partnership, and according to the appellees, all of those new partnerships included arbitration agreements. We are the special, I guess the special parties. We got a trust agreement. That trust agreement doesn't have an agreement to arbitrate.
How do we know that?
Because the trust agreement is all that it is. It's an agreement to hold our interests in trust. And going back to this, what we have said in our verification, what we've said in our complaint, let me read paragraph one of the verification. The plaintiffs were members and or beneficial owners, were members and or beneficial owners of the DCJV and its successors. Beneficial owners means we were beneficial owners inside because of the trust. Beneficial owners because of the trust. Not because we were members of these partnerships, but because our trust was being held by these partnerships. And to read the complaint otherwise is really to read the paragraphs in the complaints in a vacuum.
I mean, I don't know how that helps you, counsel, here, based on your allegations. If your trust was being held by these partnerships, why isn't it embraced under these partnership agreement provisions regarding arbitration?
Well, I think there are several reasons there.
I understand you could argue it, but where do you allege this even in your complaint?
Where do we?
That you're not bound by these. I don't know that you can have it both ways. That's all I'm getting at. Unless you allege somewhere that you had a trust agreement, here are the elements of the trust agreement, and it didn't include an arbitration clause.
I think that we can demonstrate a trust agreement. It's very simple and bare bones. We were kept apart from all of these partnerships inside this trust bubble, and all of our rights arise from management of these partnerships. The disputes arise from the management of the partnerships and the financial dealings therein. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement.